Nothing Important Podcast, Owen Benjamin. Let's go.
You're listening to Nothing Important. Please enjoy the show.
Gentlemen, on the Someone Important Hotline, it's Owen Benjamin. Owen, how's it going today?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing awesome. Awesome. Thanks for coming on the show and hanging out with us.
Anytime.
Now, you actually just, you're in LA right now. You just flew in this morning, right?
I just landed from Minneapolis.
Oh,
yeah, that was a good flight. That was cool. I got to roll with my dog, so he sat on my lap. He high-fived me when I got bored.
Well, that's good.
That's pretty cool.
Well, we appreciate you talking with us, and you're actually going to be in Chicago May 29th through the 31st.
Yeah, I can't wait. I love Chicago. I'm at the Improv in Schaumburg.
Yeah, Dave and I actually we're Chicago based, so we'll definitely be there. So we'll make sure to come up and say hi.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely come out. It's gonna be a blast.
And then also for those of you listening, Owen also has a podcast called Why Didn't They Laugh, which is, I'm a big fan. I like the whole concept. It started off, it's basically like the dissection of jokes that kind of bomb.
Yeah, because I think a lot, like living in a major city, I have the advantage as a comic of seeing like the best comics in the world, like the Bill Burrs and Louis C.K.'s and all these people work on jokes. And how no one is immune to that bomb where a joke doesn't work and you don't really know why and you just have to work on it till it does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so many people just think that it just comes out of nowhere. Then you watch the special and it's all so fluid. And I find the process to be one of the reasons I like comedy so much, because you just never know why something will work or won't work. And just all the things that go into humor, you know, whether it's the lighting, the sound, the people in the crowd, how tight they're packed, you know, the tone you're giving, the setup, the play, you know, there's so many things that I just think it's one of those never-ending mysteries that I'm just glad to be a part of.
Yeah, a lot of people just assume, like, if you can make your friends laugh, that you can go up on stage and be a stand-up comic, but that's not the case at all.
No, I just heard Bill Burr sum it up really interestingly on one of Brian Callen's podcasts. He was like, everyone's always saying you got to find your voice. He's like, you start with your voice, and then you lose it because you're, like, so scared or you're, like, trying to do something you're not. He's like, the guy that makes his friends laugh is your voice, but, like, the crippling fear of, like, public speech or, like, trying to be something you're not is how you lose your voice.
Mm-hmm.
So there's almost, like, an element of, like, Buddhism in stand-up where, like, you are who you are the whole time. You just have to see it, type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of intense. I've been on a plane all day, guys.
That's okay. Did you have any morning cocktails on the plane?
No cocktails. A lot of hydration. I can't drink on planes. I get hungover when I'm, like, by the time I'm landing.
Awesome. As a comic who travels a lot, do you travel solo?
Sometimes I get to bring an opener with me. Sometimes, a lot of times I don't. I'll just go with my dog.
Gotcha.
Or completely solo, yeah.
Gotcha.
That's why I got so into podcasts. Like, I never even listened to them, let alone, like, do one myself until, I just, you know, I'm alone so much that it's just better to listen to than music. Music is kind of repetitive.
You're echoing my sensibilities right now, because Brian and I, we used to be in a comedy rock rap band, or we call it crap, and we broke up, you know, several years ago, and then we decided to get into podcasting as a way as like extension of our version of humor, basically. And we never listened to podcasts before we started doing it. And I always say podcasting is blowing up because music just sucks now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have seen my last special, the High Five Till It Hurts, but one of the jokes I do in it, you can get it on YouTube, is that how every pop song is literally the same chord.
Because
I'm a piano player, so it's like,
yeah,
like, because I have that ear, and I'm sure you guys do too, or like, if you know enough about music, you can just hear the insane amount of repetition that is now pop music.
Yeah.
It's just like, I find it pretty tedious.
We actually had a song like that ourselves back in the day. It was like a 3-chord thing, and we kind of did a melody of songs that sounded like, and it's that
oh, I
gag,
know. It's the part
I loved
the
it.
The irony is, I did that joke, and someone was like, oh, Axis is all awesome. Yeah. You did that. And then someone else was like, oh, this other dude does this, can it be? And I didn't want to write back to everybody because it would be too time consuming, but I wanted to be like, do you guys not see the irony in this?
Right.
I'm like, you're now pointing out that all jokes are the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, like, comics are the same thing. There's like, you catch a theme. You know, I remember when Rogan called out that dude, that Mexican guy.
Carlos Mencia, we were just talking about
just
that
talking
this morning.
About
oh, yeah.
That.
When the thing about that, like, Mencia definitely, I mean, from, you know, I don't want to talk trash, but I mean, probably did steal jokes. But the joke he was called out for, I everyone I knew wrote that joke. When you see that there's going to be a wall built between California and Mexico, the first thing you think is Mexican.
Right.
Like, who's going to build the wall?
Right.
Like, anyone with a comedy mind thinks that. And I mean, Rogan did a great job calling him out, and someone definitely should have, but I just thought the joke in question was like, just so, I don't know. It was just like, when that news item came on, anybody that writes jokes, like, that's the first punchline they thought of.
Right.
So
right.
It's almost like the pyramids in Guatemala and Egypt and the concept of the number zero and all these, like, things that come out of, that are definitely not stolen, but people just come up with at the same time. I think that happens in all aspects of art.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
We find one of the things we try to do when we interview people too is we like learning about like their like, you know, about your passion and what makes you do it. And one thing that I always think of when I think of stand-up comics is, how often do people come up to you and try to either solicit jokes or try to be funny to you because they know that you're a stand-up comic?
Sometimes it happens. One thing about me is I'm 6'7", and I typically wear earphones, like headphones.
Yeah.
And that's like a really cool way to get people to not be like, you got to hear my joke about fags. Like that. It's like, you can always tell immediately that you don't want to hear the person's joke. Because sometimes people's jokes are awesome, but usually just the setup, you can tell that they're like deeply disturbed people, you know? It's like, I don't want to hear your, like, crazy hate shit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people don't, like, understand. They think comedy is just being an asshole. And it's, like, not.
Well,
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. We were actually talking about that, too. Actually, we have a lot of parallels. You know, you're from a small city in upstate New York, you know, and it's probably just a lot like Dave and I. We're from a tiny, tiny town that has like 3 stoplights, you know, and
5,000 people.
5,000 people.
And 3 nuke plants.
So like when you talk about your comedy.
5,000 people and what? What was the thing after 5,000 people?
And 3 nuke plants, which I've heard you mention before.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're from a town with nuke plants?
Yeah, there are 3 major nuke plants in the Midwest within 15 miles of our town, I think. Like, we are in the worst, one of the worst zones in the country, yeah.
I'm just hoping one breaks open so I get superpowers. So that's what I'm
my town's 10,000 people with 3 nuke plants.
Oh, big so city got, guy.
But I gotta say
so
this,
we
though.
Actually, we're pretty metropolitan compared to you guys, though, because we have 10,000 people.
Oh, yeah, that's, whoa.
Yeah.
Well, there's 3 little towns of 5,000 people each, and we're like the poorer town, and like the other towns get the money from the nuke plants, so there's always like this crazy rivalry amongst the towns, like the rich kids and the poor kids of these shitty little Midwest towns.
I know, and in the end, they're all the same. It's like, I remember growing up, there's a town right next to ours, and we used to always say that they were the incest town.
We're the incest town.
No, but then it turned out we were.
Oh.
Yeah, like forever we're like, oh, Fulton, yeah, incest. And then like someone's like, if you checked like the stats on this thing, we actually have more cases of incest. We're like,
find out you're the bad guy.
Yeah, so it just kind of bites you in the ass. Like all the time you spend talking shit, and then it turns out like you're the person you're talking shit about.
Oh, yeah. And we got a lot of money from the new plants, and it did absolutely nothing for us. It was like, the economy still sucks. Like, my parents' house is like a 3-bedroom house worth like 60 grand. You know, like, the real estate is brutal. But teachers would make like 80 grand a year, but they still were like really bad and like abusive. Like, we would have like brand new oboes, but like, no one knew how to pronounce the word rhetoric. it was like money didn't, and everyone in my family's a teacher except me, so we get in fights over this shit, but I'm like, money doesn't solve the education problem. It actually can make it worse sometimes.
Right.
Where it's like, in my opinion, the system's off, because we were flooded with money for like 8 years because of the new plants, and it was one of the worst school systems I think imaginable.
Like, more money can't make teachers care. Yeah.
Well, like,
no, all it does is makes the school board hire their dumb cousins. That's a good job.
Well, the town next to ours, the big thing is, like, they have this really kick-ass school, you know, smaller school, but really nice amenities and all that, and they built it on sand. And the school's, like, sinking. It's this huge deal. Like, he had all this money. He had, like, the worst engineer ever to freaking build your school.
Yeah,
like, it's just wasted.
Yeah, money doesn't fix stupid.
one thing we, in addition to, like, the small-town sensibilities, one of the things that Dave and I really like about your comedy, and you kind of touched on it, is that you're not mean at all. And Dave and I were kind of discussing that.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of comics that are kind of big, or, like, I personally, you know, and who the hell am I? But, like, I personally feel like a lot of times they're either intentionally mean or super preachy.
Right.
And you're not at all. You seem just like a very, like, down-to-earth, even-keeled dude. Who's, you know, just...
You seem like the comedy is kind of an outlet for your philosophical beliefs, too, I mm-hmm. guess I would put it. And you put a lot of thought and intellect behind what you're saying also. Yeah,
and, like, I'll sound preachy occasionally, but it's only, like, to, like, make people do healthier or happier shit. It's never political, religious, my, like, dogmas, none of that. It's like, I'll be preachy to tell people to get more hydrated.
Right.
Like, there's always like a sense of like, simple, you know, like lately I've been doing a bit about how to end war, we need to full bellies and empty balls. And I like preach that like I'm a senator. But it's like, I believe it to be true, but it's just so stupid that like, I don't think it really gives off the vibe of preachiness, because I'm just like, dudes can't get mad when their balls are empty. It's physically impossible. And then I do this whole thing about how it's a domino effect to international war if people's balls are too full.
Hold on, let me get my thought real quick.
I'm too busy laughing at that. I'm sorry.
I don't believe in mean comedy at all. I actually find it like I want to fight them. Like whenever I see people, you know, like bullies that hide in calling themselves alt or like I don't know smart. I'm like, you're not smart, you're mean.
do you
know what I mean? Smart's appealing to as many people as you can. Like, mean isn't making people feel bad because your dad, you know, had more money than theirs. Like, that's insane.
As a stand-up comic, do you run into, like, a lot of issues with political correctness? Because Dave and I often talk about, like,
hell. Oh, yeah.
Like, everybody's pissed off about everything. Like, everybody wants to be on, like, some winning side of an argument and not let shit drop. And when we were preparing to speak to you, we were talking about, like, well, shit, that's got to be tough for comedians, because a lot of times comedians say things that are a little edgy, you know.
They're the lightning rod for those people.
Right, yeah, lightning rod.
I've been going on rants. I mean, I'm glad you think of me as like the feel good, nice comic, because it may change dramatically.
Oh, don't get jaded and cynical on
this PC shit. No, because I see it as like a threat to like freedom and art.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was just offhanded the other day. I was saying how Asians love noodles, and
right.
Someone was like, "You're a racist." I go, "Do you know what the fuck racism means?" I'm like, "Racism means you hate a race. You're not saying like." You know, I'm like, Asians love noodles, dude. I worked at a Japanese restaurant as a busboy for 5 years. They love them. And I was like, so if I say Canadians love hockey, you don't have a reaction because you see them as white people.
Mm.
I'm like, what you're doing is bad. You're ostracizing a racial group. I'm like, they love noodles. And they want to be able to say they do without someone like you saying that they shouldn't love noodles.
Right.
And then they just get so confused because they say so many words that they usually back down.
Has anybody ever tried to, like, because I know you're a big dude. Has anybody ever tried to, like physically confront you after a show for anything?
Yeah, but it's only because they don't think anything will happen. That's another thing. Like, small-town nuclear power bros like us usually end up nice because, like, if you say crazy shit, someone will punch you in the face. So it's like, you know, a lot of these kids from, you know, I call hipsters indoor cats.
Yeah.
So yes. It's like us, we're not indoor, you know, we're from a place where if you come up to someone and poke their chest and say that you offend them, they're going to hit you in the throat because it's softer.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Where it's like, and that's why people are usually, like, fairly respectful to each other because there's, like, repercussions. I've had, like, shows where people come up to me after and they're just like, hey, man, it's not cool how you, and I'm like, I just want to grab them and be like, buddy, we're one blip of, like, an oil crisis away from me viewing you as food. Like, no one cares about your Facebook status, buddy. I'm like, if we don't get enough avocados and oranges this year, I'll eat you. But, you know, that sounds a little psychotic.
Well, but I mean, but there's so much truth in that because Dave and I on our show, we talk about that all the time where how all these hard asses and everybody thinks is a hard ass until, like, somebody like me comes along and that will just slap them. Like, and, you know, I'm not like the world's biggest badass or anything like that, but, like, there's a line eventually. Like,
well, it's, here's money, here's mouth. Let's put the two together.
Like, make it happen. You know, like, it's I just think your comics are in such a hard position these days because there are so many butthurt pussies out there that are just looking for a reason to be offended.
Now it's cool to be a victim. You got to figure out what victim you are and that's who you are. Oh, and by the way, it's never the groups in question. Like when I do Cleveland and it's 75% black, I can do the entire show about race. And then I go to, like, Minneapolis or Tampa and all the white people, like, get offended. It's like, it's bonkers, dude. It's absolutely crazy. I try, you know, I take a lot of pride in just giving people a good show and not making them too uncomfortable. So I try and stay away from it. But the whole culture is going down this rabbit hole because there's never been less crime in America. Like, poor people have never had more. You know, it's like people are tweeting that they're poor.
Yeah,
I'm like, bro, that means problems. You have a phone, an internet connection, and time to complain. I'm like my grandfather was a lead miner with seven fingers who drank himself to death and never complained.
Yeah.
And now you have these people that are like, well, I went to law school to be a lawyer, and I couldn't get a job, so now I'm going to protest. It's like, they were trying to be Darth Vader and failed, and now we're supposed to feel bad for them.
Exactly. Just real quick, Dave and I have talked about this a couple times on the show. It's funny that you mentioned, like, the most innocent comment. There's going to be somebody that wants to be outrageously outraged about it and fight you on it. At one of my positions, there is something just came up and, like, in a manual. It said curry stains upholstery because it's spicy and it has a strong odor, something like that. And the girl started flipping out, like, in the office because she read that in a manual about how to clean the upholstery in the office. And I'm like, have you ever had curry? Like, it is spicy and it does fucking stink. Like, there's nothing racist about that. Like, you're not, like, saying, like,
oh, dude,
I hate Indian people because they like curry. It's just like, man, curry fucking stinks.
And this is why I can function without just throwing haymakers constantly is I don't think they're bad people. I think that they're very ignorant to, like other cultures. Like, most people that act like this, they truly believe they're sticking up for the underdog because they have no life experience whatsoever. But they think that saying curry is spicy is racist. And that's it's insane to us, like the people that interact with a large amount of people or just, like, have a frame of reference. But if you're just in this isolated little bubble and all you do is watch, like, Bill Maher and all these, like, super intense shows where they're always sticking up for people that don't need help.
Mm-hmm.
You start, you know, I call it the Karate Kid syndrome, where everyone's always trying to, like, stick up for the underdog that doesn't need it.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, perfect example. On Sullivan and Son, but I was on Sullivan and Son on TBS. When we lit Roy, we had to use more light because he's black. And that's a fact.
Right.
And like any lighter, anybody that works on a set that is in charge of lights knows that you need way more lights for black people. And it's like, you can't really say that because someone will react. And it's like, oh, but they get the same lights as everyone. It's like, no, they don't. They need more lights because black absorbs light.
Yeah, it's like if you have two cars and like one gets better gas mileage, but you have to insist that they get the same amount of gas or something. Like, no, it's just, you need things to function. It's just facts. Yeah, and it gets twisted.
Oh, yeah, and I'll defend. I mean, I understand defending or attacking racism. Like, you hear racist statements where it's like, I wouldn't trust a black boss, or like, an Asian should never play basketball. Those are racist statements because you're limiting someone else's freedom based on their race, which is insane.
Right.
But saying like Asians like noodles or curry is hard to get out of carpet isn't remotely racist. You know, the thing to compare it to is if you say Italians love pasta and you don't care, like, that's fine. And if an Italian doesn't like pasta, they're not offended by that statement. It's the same with like Chinese people and rice or something. That's not negative. To say I would never take an order from a Chinese person, that's a racist statement. It's like, because it's just very simple. It's like, is there a victim in the statement? And if the only victim is someone who doesn't like noodles, then it's nothing. And you should have more to worry about in your life.
I totally agree. You're a man after our own hearts. We talk about that shit all the time. Who were your big influences for comedy? Like, what inspired you to get into comedy?
Oh, wow. I think the first nuclear power plant was my first, and then the second one. I'm kidding. I always watched Saturday Night Live with my dad growing up every Saturday. And whether or not we were having a good relationship at the time or a distant relationship at the time, SNL always kept me and my dad. That was always our common ground. And, you know, it was the Adam Sandler and Phil Hartman and that whole era. And my dad sang opera, so it was like Opera Man and like all the music stuff. Yeah, I mean, it was just, and then we got to see Adam Sandler when he came to Oswego State. And, and I think from there, Vince Vaughn, a lot of the major ones, my major influence though is Sandler, because he made music funny. And he was like, he could be really good at music and obviously smart, and he just would sing a song about his wiener.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's me. That's all I want out of life.
Yeah, and we love the little songs that you do in your act and stuff. And you're actually proficient at music, which makes it even better.
Totally. Yeah. Who are some of your biggest musical influences?
Beethoven, number one for sure. And then from there, because when I was a little kid, I was just obsessed with Beethoven. I used to play it like 10 hours a day. Like, I was like self-imposed whiplash. I don't know if you saw that movie.
Yeah, that's a pretty good movie.
I like played all day long. It was like my zone. And as I got older, I liked the power ballad guys, like Bryan Adams and like Warrant, like like Poison when they sang Every Rose Has Its Thorn, you know.
Yeah.
18 in Life by Skid Row. And then as I got older, you know, then everything just opened up to everything. You know, I like certain hip hop, but not the popular stuff, because that's just such a machine at this point. Like, it's all the same shit.
Watered down.
Yeah.
It's like DJ Garage Band. it's just bragging to a beat.
Right, yeah.
But then you listen to like the first Wu-Tang, like Enter the Wu-Tang, or like De La Soul, or a lot of these kids, it was like really imaginative stuff. I mean, there's still a lot of imaginative stuff, but I think it just goes through a filter to get on the radio until it's pretty bad.
Oh yeah, I firmly believe the best stuff out there isn't even on the radio these days, but there's some really good stuff that's not on the radio, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it's same. In country, it's the same issue. It's like, there's a lot of country music I like, but you get into the top Billboard stuff, and it's so funny how country and hip hop both face the same issues. But it's like, once you get to those huge songs, they all kind of sound the same, but
have you
then
seen,
you peel it back a little bit. What's that?
I'm sorry. Have you seen that the video where the guy takes six country songs and throws them into Pro Tools and then bounces back and forth and ends up playing them all at the same time and there's no difference between the songs?
Like, no, but I can completely imagine that. Yeah. That sounds
to
about
expand
right.
on what you're talking about before, but you know the jokes and the songs sound the same. But yeah, he lines up the actual songs and plays them together, and there's six songs playing at the same time, and it's yeah.
See, that's the thing.
That's
is like rock and roll music. Like that's why I think like Pandora is such a great thing because
oh, I love Pandora.
Yeah, Pandora. It kicks the shit out of radio because I always talk about on our show is I can't stand I hate my daddy music, and like every rock and roll song
yeah,
is
too.
Either like you hate your dad because he didn't love you enough, or you're still pining after the girl that didn't go to a homecoming dance with you. It's like how many fucking like punk rock, first off, that's not even punk to sing about that shit, but how many punk rock songs can there be about it? And it's like everybody like just like you said, once it reaches a certain point, it just appeals to like the most common denominator, and people like it because of like the 404 beat or like the same like how many fucking times can somebody say baby in a song like it, or like rhyme like hood and good
like party with the Bacardi dude.
I'm about to do I'm about to start working on a song. I actually have to start learning Spanish. I know a little Spanish, but I want to write a song called Everything Rhymes in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Because everything ends in A or O. It's like the easiest shit. It's like every single word rhymes in Spanish. And then, like, I'm going to do examples of how nothing rhymes in German. And that's one reason why, like, they were so angry for so long.
It's kind of like the Izzle thing. How, you know, we actually wrote a song back in the day about how people just throw Izzle in the end of a line. You can make anything into a rap.
Right.
You know, because
and then
you
it became
just
like this.
Oh, it was genius. Yeah. Izzle is, like, perfect. It's just, you just end every word with the same word. It's just. Complete freedom.
Well, Snoop Dogg really brought that to the next level, and then like he created, he was kind of like the first, I guess, to do that whole Izzle thing, and I think it's because like, you know, congratulations to him on his success, but like if you listen to anything that he's rapped on in the past 10 years, it's literally like the same like 16 lines yeah. that he uses for, he's always like the top dog from the LBC, and he always has to spell his name, and then the way he like evolved past that was adding Izzle to the, so instead of like D-O-double-G, it's D-O-double-jizzle.
And, oh yeah, I mean, this is what I think of that dude. I think that dude's so beyond smart that he inverts all the way back to being like so simple, because it's all about branding. It's like, mm-hmm. it's more like how Coke sells soda than it is being a musician. Like,
oh, yeah.
A lot of those type of mogul guys, it literally is like, okay, what am I? What is my brand? And how can I say it over and over and over again and never change it? Because it's like, you know, when Coors Beer tried to make water and they called it Coors Water, no one bought it. Coors is beer. So then, like, Coca-Cola made Aquafina. They had to start a whole new brand.
Right.
Because people can't handle any changes to a brand. It's like, you too want to do like a... like an album, like a jazzy weird album. So they changed the name of the band to do that. And then they went back to U2 because, you know, when you buy a Snoop Dogg album, you're like, it's a spelling bee. Cause he's always going to be spelling. And then there's going to be some Izzles. He's going to tell me where he's from again. He's going to root it. He's going to say something about weed, something about hoes. And there's going to be like a really relaxed song that I could drive slowly to. And then, so people know exactly what they're getting.
Yeah,
you know, Eminem, it's like, I want to listen to a dude who's really angry at his mom, who's like really angry at like now he's angry at success. He was angry at poverty. It's basically just like, can you imagine if Eminem did like a happy song? No one would ever buy that.
it's totally all about brand. I guess you got to stick with what, you know, makes you money, kind of like, you know, there was Garth Brooks and then he did the whole Chris Gaines thing that was like some sort of weird folk shit and nobody bought it. But then like his next album sells like 70 million in the first week because he's just sticking with what
Garth
he knows.
Brooks didn't do it. Right. Cause the name becomes the brand. It's like,
right.
If you buy a Cadillac and it's like a Pinto, you're like, I'm never buying a Cadillac again. Cause it used to be that like Cadillac was that thing. So if you change too much, that's why, you know, when Toyota wanted to make a luxury car, they're not just going to make an expensive Toyota. They invented Lexus just to make it so it's believable.
Right.
And it's the same with comedy. Comedy has the same thing. If Chris Rock comes out smashing watermelon, you're going to be very confused.
I get it.
You know, if Brian Regan starts being like, fuck you, motherfucker, or like all the Mormons will be like, what? Or like Jim Gaffigan starts talking politics, or if like, you know, everything would fall apart.
I think with the example of Chris Rock smashing watermelon like Gallagher, like even though Chris Rock is black, I'm sure there would be just a contingent of hipsters that would call Chris Rock racist.
Because he's special.
Oh, 100%. The funniest thing you'll ever see is when white hipsters call black people racist for saying something about black people. Like, it's just unbelievable. And by the way, but they'll still say redneck or white trash, and there's no problem with that whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think my goal in life is I want to be called a peckerwood by somebody in anger.
Just once.
It's never happened. But that is my favorite racial slur of all time.
Bro, that's a real fucking peckerwood statement. I just did it.
But I sense your anger was fake.
It was fake.
Well, we won't take up too much more of your time, Owen. Congratulations on all your success thus far, and we're really excited to see you on stage in Chicago. If we get a chance, we'll come up and introduce ourselves to you. Maybe, you know, hang out, have a couple beers.
Jam a song for the good old days.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. You're here for 3 days. You want to hang out and do a podcast with us or jam out? We'll be more
than
happy to.
We do. We started it and have tailed off, but part of our podcast was originally once a month, we cover a song by a female artist and call it That Time of the Month. So if you're willing to hop on something like that, because we're actually sitting in a music studio right now that I work out of. So.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I want to get in on that. I want to do that with you guys.
Absolutely.
So like maybe when we're off the air, we'll try to set something up. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But more importantly, the most important question on the Nothing Important podcast is, what is your favorite frozen pizza?
Thin crust. It's very simple because I like to add my own shit. But brand wise,
nice.
Newman Zone has some good stuff. And so does this other one that I don't remember the name, but it's at Ralph's. That's good. I know what it looks like.
I don't think we have Ralph's around here.
I don't think so. That's pretty interesting. We actually just got off the phone with Julianne Emery. She plays Betsy Kettleman on Better Call Saul. And she said the same.
Oh, no way. I love that show.
Yeah. She was awesome. So, you know, maybe check us out and listen to it when we post it. But she said the same thing, like adding toppings to it. And for some reason, that never fucking occurred to me before then. I was just like, oh, well, you know, it's like a cracker crust with shitty cheese and like really oily pepperoni. Like, I'm totally going to start adding shit to my frozen pizza from now on.
Yeah, I see the frozen pieces is almost like the pill that like just allows me to put things in it. So it's like the frozen pizza is the base, and then I get to like decorate it.
So now I have something to do because my roommate / brother loves Jack's cheese, and that is it. So whenever I go shopping, I got to buy a bunch of Jack's cheese pizzas. Never think to add my own shit to it.
Right. See, you learn something new every day, Dave.
Every day.
I love it.
Well, awesome, Owen. Thank you so much for being on the Nothing Important podcast. We look forward to seeing you May 29th through the 31st at the Improv in Schaumburg, Illinois. Everybody, please check out Owen's podcast, Why Didn't They Laugh? It's great discussions, very philosophical. And Owen, thank you so much for being on with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Cheers. All right, Dave, that was Owen Benjamin. What a cool dude, right?
Yeah, like a man after our own hearts.
Yeah.
Honestly, the coincidences were kind of like he would use phrases that we used in our podcast and that we just used 5 minutes before talking.
Right, yeah. It's a very very similar thought, but I guess that's because it goes back to the whole being from a small town surrounded by nuclear power plants, right?
Yeah. And he seems to be about our age, so yeah.
Yeah. So totally good guy. Thanks. Thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure to hit us up on nothingimportantpodcast.com, Twitter, Facebook. I want more than 17 goddamn Twitter followers, so I need you people to do that. I know there is a ton of you out there, so just hit me up on Twitter and make me feel good for once, okay? It's so crappy. Like, you'll pick, like, some random guy. Like, oh, this is Tom Jones who works at fucking Kmart, and he has, like, 3,000 followers, and, like, we literally have thousands of listens, and we have 17 fucking people on Twitter. So if you guys could help us out, do us a solid. I'll give you a bro hug. Virtual Bro Hug. Hit us up on Twitter. Dave.
Yeah.
You can stop recording now.